can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
For nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
We'll put out all points bulletins. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new
attention.
World order. A
new world order. Attention.
The government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Joe's
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
I was waiting to see if you'd play anything, Lou.
Yeah, I know what a hammer is, Lou.
Do you know what a hammer is? Well, it is June 10th, 2010. It is approximately 5:01 p.m. in a few seconds Pacific time here in Central California. We're coming to you live. This is the Dutch Jones radio program, daily, Monday through Friday, on UBroadcast via our DutchJones.tk website. And then at 6 p.m. Pacific time, we will jump over to LibertyTreeRadio.4mg.com. Actually, I think they'll be on Micro Effect and 365 Live and Ustream. Yeah.
I don't. 365 Live is a better.
Yeah, so lots of feeds, lots of places. I'm getting emails. People are taking the feed off of UBroadcast throughout the day around the country and around the world and retransmitting. I got an email today from some folks in Australia and New Zealand who are retransmitting it there on their equivalents of the Citizens Band radio. I don't know what it would be. Australia Band Radio or something. Subject Band Radio, SB. Subject of the Crown. I don't think they're subjects of the Crown anymore, but you never know where you're going to hear us. If you're listening on some type of wireless system, drop us an email at DutchJonesShow@yahoo.com. We want to get our mind around exactly where this is going out. We know that we're getting about 400 listeners. Actually, I'll be accurate, 365 listeners. Regular listeners, I think, is what it is. There's a couple people that drop in for a few minutes and stuff and get off, but that doesn't really count. And then, who is this radical guy? Because when I post during the day when I'm reading news articles to get ready for this, plus it's my job for the church and the militia here to gather, you know, current events and intel, both, you know, out of the media, listening to different radio shows, monitoring scanners, going out to the community and pumping people for information. It's part of my job as the communications and outreach coordinator for our group. So I do that. And I'll leave comments. I'll start to blog or leave little comments like on Yahoo News and stuff. And I put DutchJones.tk in my signature, and I get lots of hate mail. I get lots of hate mail. I get a lot of support, too. It seems like there are more people that are thinking like us that are getting courageous and speaking out on these forums and things like that. I don't go to forums too much, but you know what I'm talking about. Like on Yahoo News, you can leave a comment on the bottom, and it takes a couple of minutes for it to post. I never go back to them usually, but today I went back to a few of them, and you know, I get these, oh, you anti-Semitic racist pig, you know, you bigoted. They keep calling me a tea bigot. I think that means like tea bag, you know, like tea party. And I said, as a matter of fact, I'm not a member of the Tea Party movement. I think, you know, compared to me, they're Girl Scouts. You know, no insult to the Tea Party people, but I mean, on the scale of how extreme we are, or I am, I should say. And then I'm finding out they're even, you know, there are far more people more extreme than I am. But I tend to dabble still in the mainstream, and that brings a lot of attention to myself. And we get a lot of attention up here. Most of it wrong. Most of it is unfounded, but that's okay. If we can keep them busy, you know, watching us when we're doing nothing really big, it takes some heat off of those of you that are doing the real work. You know, they don't know that you're digging a bunker in the side of your mountain when we're out here just weed whacking our shooting range, and they want to watch us. I don't know what a tea bigot is, but that's what I've been called in a couple of emails. I guess that's what and I love this. I can't remember who came up with it. There was some female rhino, you know, Republican in name only, some Republican Party wonk, that started calling the left libtards, L-I-B-T-A-R-D-S. So I've been calling everybody libtards who calls me a T-bigot. You know, and I love that. I love libtard. If it, we should come up with a, you know, where we just do a half an hour, we make up names to call the non-extremists, you know, the Marxists, the Fabian socialists out there. Come up with one word that kind of combines all of the vitriol that we feel towards them. And that way, when somebody sends me hate mail, I just send them back that one-word answer, you know. Or even a sentence, you know, a sentence that drums it up. If any of you are wordsmiths, go ahead and email that to me. That would be good. Oh, or you can call in with it if you want to throughout the day. It is 559-561-8225. Oh, wait, will you grab your crayon, like I always say?
Strawberry.
Yeah, or strawberry. Lou likes to write things with strawberries on the wall when we give him messages. It's just weird. 559-561-8225. I spent the day fabricating one weed eater out of about three pieces of dead weed eaters. Lou and I weed eated this beautiful, just flat of property that's up for sale, and unfortunately it's, I don't know how big it is, a couple acres, but it's right on a hillside overlooking the river. It also overlooks the main highway, but you can't see it because it's so steep, but you can kind of hear it, but the water's raging by. We're at probably 10 times our normal water flow, but it was just beautiful out there today. The temperatures dropped back into the high 70s, mid-80s maybe, but we were out there early, like around 8 o'clock, just weed eating, and it was just beautiful. I thought it was great. What did you think, Lou?
I thought that...
You thought what, Lou?
I thought that there was a lot of weeds in it.
Yeah, now there isn't. Isn't youth wasted on the young?
No.
I've been making a point these last few days because I've just been having a bad time under, you know, all kinds of spiritual and physical attacks. And
that's a heart board.
A what?
Heart board.
I don't even know what that... Oh, yeah, I like to take things apart and make new things out of them. I was a real tinkerer as a kid, and it's really paying off when you're poor. But I'm realizing even the drive from work, you know, after you've done, you know, worked on one of these mountain lots, which is great in itself, just driving up the North Fork Road along the North Fork River and just enjoying the oak trees and the animals and a few of the people, you know, I wave at everybody. Most people just kind of, he's one of those guys up there. I can tell he's driving one of them combat-looking four-wheel drives with no doors. What?
What'd he do? Put his hand up like that?
Why he do that? We get a lot of foreigners this time of year. It's tourism season. And we get approached by a lot of people looking for things, and you can always tell the tourists because they're wearing Birkenstocks with black socks, Bermuda shirts, button-up shirts, short sleeves with all different kinds of shorts, anything from, you know, these oversized basketball-looking shorts to like safari shorts, and they all come up with a guidebook of something in their hand, smelling of, you know, European tobacco, and they say Americans are rude. I've found a lot of Europeans are rude, especially when they're frustrated, when they can't figure out the map or they can't find a toilet. One of the biggest shortages here in Three Rivers is because we live along a river. The septic systems are incredibly restricted. So most businesses are exempt from offering toilets to customers. Yes, that's true.
Like the Shell
gas station, a gas station with no bathrooms. And it's like a state law that you have to have bathrooms and free air. But because the septic systems are so small, because it'll contaminate the river, they can't do it. So there's only like four places where there's public bathrooms over a 12-mile stretch. And then you get into the park, and it's up there. So they'll be asking you, where public bathroom? Where public bathroom? There aren't any. You're going to have to drive all the way to the museum. It's like 5 miles up the road. They'll have outhouses for you. Oh, no, no outhouses. Me need fresh toilet. And you're like, no, sorry, pal.
No.
You know, you have to go all the way. I think the really ritzy restaurant, what's that called? The Gateway, at the gate. There's a big expensive restaurant way up the road, and they have bathrooms. I've never been in there. I went in there one day, but they wouldn't let me stay. They kicked me out because I wasn't properly attired. Yeah, all the restaurants will have bathrooms, but they won't let you use them unless you sit down for like a five-course meal. That's the big problem. So latrines are a shortage up here. We're fortunate enough. We live far enough away from the river. It doesn't really matter. We're a couple, I would say 150 to 200 yards from, you know, where it would be a problem, but we have our own leach fields and everything like that. Plus, Lou just goes outside. I mean, he just finds a big weedy area and sits down. It's kind of scary when he does that, but
hey, that's
what he does.
I need a fresh toilet.
I need a fresh toilet. No house. But yeah, things are getting weird here for us personally. You know, it's like things are breaking down. It's strange, but we're all under attack. I mean, I can't talk to anyone, none of the listeners, none of my friends, none of my relatives that still talk to me, I can't talk to anyone without them saying, yeah, things are getting pretty bad. Things are pretty bad down here right now.
Things are very bad down
here. We're hoping for a constitutional settlement. That's for all you Monty Python fans. That's an old Monty Python skit, but I probably didn't do it justice. But yeah, everybody's out of work or underworked, or and the people that are working are overworked. I think somebody's calling me. Yeah, take that phone, Lou. It's about to go dead anyway. And so we just got to keep praying for each other. Even if we never meet face to face, we pray for you guys. I do daily, several times a day. I pray for the listeners, and the Lord knows who you are. Whether you're waiting for your unemployment check to come in, or you're waiting for that interview, or you got sick kids, you got problems at work, I try to pray for everything in your lives. And I encourage and welcome you guys to do it for us, because we need it. You know, we got we're on the verge of three broken down vehicles. You know, we're limping along with Stacy's. I'm using an unregistered vehicle now to work, and just I pray every day that the Lord blinds our enemies on the highways, that the bandits that go around in those cars with the bubblegum machines on top won't find me and pull me over. I haven't registered my vehicle in 5 years. I won't pass smog here, so they won't let me do it. So it's just, you know, got to zip around as fast as you can on all the back roads and do the work, you know, and make a few dollars here and there so that hopefully you can fix the other vehicles. But that's all we can ask to do. I mean, we don't deserve any better than that. Let's be honest. We're a fallen people, but the Lord wants to hear our needs and hear our prayers. He wants our praise first. You don't just go to him and say, Lord, give me. That's nothing more annoying than that. What?
Give me, or else.
Or else. That's kind of what the modern name it and claim it movement's like. God, I need a Mercedes-Benz. I need a seven-story house.
God bless
I need
Joe and Jack and give me a Cadillac.
Yeah, God bless Joe and Jack and give me a Cadillac. Oh, look at these birds. Woo! We just had a swarm of birds, like a school
Get
of fish.
Shotgun.
Just yeah,
make
I don't
one.
Even know what they were. Those, they looked like you could eat them. They were pretty fat. Whatever they were, came right at the studio window and then realized it was a window. Thought we were under airborne attack by
Should
micro
have had your,
machines or something.
Your 12
but keep
gauge.
Keep praying for us. We need that. We need the financial support. But if you can't give anything else, give the prayers. Pray for Stacy to continue her work. Pray for us to continue to be protected here in our sanctuary, our stronghold. And that there's that sound again. Sounds like somebody dragging something across something. I don't know if it's the flag. We got the big Confederate flag waving in the back because the fan's on, but I don't know what that is. But we're going to get to the stories. I promise. Somebody asked what the theme was. I never really have a theme because we're current event driven, and whatever I'm working on to teach the church folks, I kind of share that with you. There's been several articles today. I mean, some of them don't really relate directly to what we're doing, but it's kind of funny. There was a report done by, I think it was an Australian or a New Zealand firm, to figure out where the safest and least safest places in the world to live were. It was based on economics, morals, crime, homicides per 100,000 people. And it's funny because I've been all over the, you know, North and South America. I've never been, you know, to Europe or anything like that. I plan to someday after the victories of of the Republic and other countries start to go the right way. It'd be nice to go visit Ireland or Scotland, or I don't think I really care about England that much. Sorry about our English listeners. I know there's two of you at least. But I never thought of America as a really dangerous place to live. You know, everything, you know, in all of it. The cities are bad, but like where I'm at, you know, I carry a gun everywhere I go 90% of the time. You got to keep guessing for that 10% so people just don't mess with you. But I just don't think of it as a violent. I mean, I've been to El Salvador, I've been to Venezuela, I've been to Colombia, I've been to Washington, D.C. Okay, Washington, D.C. is an independent city, so it's not really part of the United States. But they're much more violent than, you know, a town of 30,000 people in Central California. But then again, I look at like Fresno and the towns around here that are above 90,000, and they are very violent. So, well, the rest of the world must be listening to my show when I talk about all the homicides here. And let's do our little report here. This is a report that's on the Associated Press, Dateline Brussels, but it comes from another country, from Sydney, Australia. Cuba and China are more peaceful than the United States, according to a report published Thursday. The Global Peace Index, now that just sounds like a pinko group, doesn't it? Prepared by the Sydney, Australia-based Institute for Economics and Peace, you know, redistribution of wealth and disarmament, says the world in general is becoming a more violent place. The report says nearly two-thirds of the countries it ranks every year have become more violent since 2007. Now, note, Iraq is the most violent nation in the world. We'll just cut right to that. It's number one. Followed by Somalia, Afghanistan, Sudan, Pakistan, Israel, Georgia the nation, not the state, so don't get upset, my friends in the South. Chad, not the guy you know who works down at the coffee shop, but Chad is actually a country. And lastly, the Democratic Republic of Congo. Now, beacons of peace are New Zealand, which tops the index for safest places to live. Those of you that emailed me today, you should be happy about that. Listen, let me get through them. New Zealand, Iceland, Japan, Austria, Norway, Ireland, Denmark, and Luxembourg, Finland, and Sweden. Those are the best. Now, let's look at those. So you've got New Zealand, which is kind of a left-leaning, anti-nuke, out there on their own, way south, you know, way south of Australia. So, okay, so that's fine. And it's like one of the fastest growing religions in New Zealand. I was looking up stuff today on the demographics. No, it's Jediism.
I know.
Oh, yeah, Homehall Jibar. Yeah, it's Luke. Yeah, and so Star Wars is like their third largest religion down there. Iceland, there's just nobody there. And the people are crazy. If you ever watch anything about Iceland, they're out doing all these like amazing four-wheel drive things and, you know, ice swimming, you know. So, you know, okay, so they don't have
ice skating to work.
Ice skate, you know, whatever. And there's very few people there. So the number of homicides is probably pretty slim. Japan, which is, and how do you say it? I always get this wrong. Hegemony of all the same race. They don't let anybody immigrate. They very strict social system. Strong weapons restrictions. If you own a firearm, it has to be kept at the police station. I'm not blaming guns, but you understand what I'm saying. It's just they don't have many opportunities. There's a lot of stabbings there, a lot of suicides. Austria, which I really can't explain that. Right in the boom, right in the middle of Europe. Maybe it's the mountainous region, the population, something. Maybe it's their, you know, uptight Germanic ways that they just, you know, they just deal with stuff differently. Now Norway, a socialist. They don't have time for crime. I like that. Norway, you know, frozen most of the time. It's another socialist country. Now, the next one surprised me. Ireland. I guess since the peace treaty with the IRA, it hasn't been that violent. You know, you don't hear a lot of stuff about Belfast and Derry and the bombings and stuff. So, you know, since Sinn Féin or Sean Finn or however you want to pronounce it, since they became a political entity and stopped being a military entity, that's okay. Denmark's just an island. You know, that's like Rhode Island, which isn't really an island. But Denmark, I mean, other than a few plays made about them, you know, brother-in-law's killing to get wives and stuff, Denmark's not much. Luxembourg, which is one of the smallest countries in the world. I mean, Luxembourg. What do you hear about from Luxembourg? I mean, they got like two people in the Olympics every year. And I think they're like, they do that skeleton or something, you know, some sledding thing. Finland, which is a very socialist country, again, frozen all the time. Sweden, extremely socialist, although it is being taken over by Muslims, I've heard. So it's just weird to me that those countries were the best. Now, the United States ranks 85th below Cuba and China, and we're just ahead of Angola, where there's like a coup every 9 months. Now, the idea for this index came from Steve Killalea. His first four letters are Kill in his name, Alea. Yeah, so it's K-I-L-L-E-L-E-A, Killalea. It's like when you get off the plane and they don't like you, instead of giving you a lay and a kiss, they give you a killalea and they hit you in the head with a bat or a coconut or a conch shell. I know that's a stretch at comedy, but I just killalea. I can't let that name go. An Australian entrepreneur, as Lou would say, who wanted to identify what makes a peaceful country. Yeah, it's up to him. He asked the Economist Intelligence Unit, the EIU. Where does that come from? The Economist Intelligence Unit. You know, how do you aspire to that job? Yeah, I want to sit in a room and think up the things that it's needed intelligently to bring peace to a nation through its economy. And I want it to just be a unit. I don't want it to be a group. I don't want it to be a club. I don't want it to be a consortium. It's going to be a unit, which is affiliated with the Economist News Magazine. Of course, you have to have a public outreach branch if you're a unit. To look at a range of variables, from levels of homicides per 100,000 people, which drags down America, like we're the only place that has homicides, and boosts Denmark, to corruption and access to primary education. So corruption and access to primary education. First five here in California, they're getting younger and younger, getting them into school so they can get them out of the control of their parents. So I don't know why that would have hurt America. The survey also looks at levels of crime, social unrest, and military spending. Now, if you look, and I'm going to go back to the nations that were great, Iceland, Japan, Australia, Norway, Ireland, Denmark, and Sweden and Finland. Now, Luxembourg I'm throwing out because I know nothing about it. Those are all, and I'm going to talk about race again, those are all predominantly single race nations. Iceland, Japan, Austria, I'm sure it's pretty lily white.
They are mostly super cold and rather small.
Yeah.
They can't raise a giant army, and it's too cold to raise a sword.
Who said that?
Olima.
Yeah, Olima says they're cold, they can't raise a sword, they can't raise a giant army, and they can't raise a giant army. That's a good one. I don't know about Luxembourg. That's just a weird variable in there. Chaos theory in work there. Now, world peace would save the global economy $7 trillion a year. What they're saying is if we didn't have armies, which I agree, we don't need standing armies. If we kept out of each other's business, we would save $7 trillion a year. But we all know what would happen. One nation, like Luxembourg, would go, ah, now is our time to strike. We will man an army of 10,000 mercenaries and take over Austria. That's what they'll do. So we need, you know, they're saying if you get away with all guns, all defensive, everything, the world would save $7 trillion.
What if one country doesn't want it?
Huh?
What if a country doesn't want it either?
That's what I just said. What if Luxembourg held out? You got to listen to the show, Lou.
I am.
Becoming more peaceful translates into economic gains, the report says, because less money needs to be spent on security and can be invested instead to make the country more prosperous. Well, let's look back at those other nations. They have really strict immigration laws. Some of them are suffering under the Islamic influx now, and they're starting to realize, hey, that was a mistake. But try to move to Japan. I've had friends from a church that I was attending that were teachers that were hired to go to Japan to teach English, and they were treated like scum. I mean, they had to carry these special IDs around. They couldn't talk politics or all these rules. Denmark. When I was a kid, my family tried to immigrate, move to Australia. It was impossible. So the countries that are the worst are either engaged in civil war constantly, or like the United States, which is worse than Cuba or China, have unchecked immigration. Now, Cuba is, you know, I mean, how are they going to have crime when they're under a tyrannical rule, okay? And the crime is the government, so there's no real recording or reporting of crime, because why would the government report on itself? And China. I mean, come on, give me a break. China's safer than the United States. Sure, they have gun control. But lately, remember all the stabbings at preschools? You know, maniacs, just workers going nuts and stabbing 15 kids? Yeah, it's just another part of the front to attack the U.S.
3-inch rule.
Yeah, what 3-inch rule? I don't think China has a 3-inch blade rule. They'll just use farm implements, Lou. But, you know, everybody's got to point the finger at America, and they'll blame the guns. You know, China and Cuba, more peaceful than the U.S. What just happened?
I said running too low on disk space.
For what?
On this computer.
For what, though? It just said, is it still running okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so just leave it alone. Stop typing stuff. Leave it alone. We want to make sure we keep transmitting. I can't even log in right now. It won't let me log in through the server. So just keep an eye on it, Lou. And how's the level looking?
It's in the green. And
everybody's saying it sounds good, I hope, and it sounds good. Good. But, yeah, I just don't understand this. Everybody wants to accuse us of being the big, brutish thugs of the world, but try moving to Africa. Any nation in Africa and see where you get. Look at the inflation in Northern Africa. Look at the violence in South Africa. Go to Central America, like where I've been, both as a soldier and a missionary. I mean, go to a hospital in Caracas and tell me, oh, America's terrible. I'm so glad I'm in Venezuela right now. You know, walk down a street in Merida, Venezuela.
With some good boots.
With a nice hat and clothes on and obviously a wallet and a camera like you're a tourist. Go do it by yourself. Now, granted, try that same thing in Compton, and you're just as likely to end up a skid mark. But overall, America is a good nation with good people. The problem is we don't speak up enough. The problem is that the cities have become hell holes. And that's what foreigners think of America. They congregate in the humanist bastions of society, which are the cities. We were talking a little bit about this last night, and you'll be able to hear it. Did we upload the audio? But you didn't change it over yet. For last night's America's Providential History? So it's on the archive.
It's on the archive. You just got to click the second link at the bottom.
Yeah, or whatever. And so, anyway, we'll hook it to the page tomorrow or something. But we are still a good people. Go to Iowa. Any towns under, I'm going to say 15,000 people. You don't see a whole row of strip clubs in a town of 6,000 people. You don't see porn shops. You don't see, a red light district. You know, and I'm not saying they don't exist. I mean, best little whorehouse in Texas kind of attitude. Every town may have its place that the gentleman, you know, elite go to. I'm not going to be naive in that. But you go down to Denver's red light district, they may have changed it. But I remember the Kit Kat Theater as a kid, we were going by that and, what goes on in there? Because of the paintings and stuff outside of it. And just theater after theater after theater. I'm not even going to talk about Times Square or big cities like that or L.A. around the airport. Around LAX, it's just debauchery. It's just like the cities in the Old Testament, Sodom and Gomorrah. They became vile collection points. So when people look at America, it's the 26 to 28, I used to have this in my head, mass metropolitan areas that are bringing the rest of us down socially, economically, scripturally, and as far as the way the rest of the world looks at us. That's why you folks in cities, you know, yesterday I had that person who called in during the break that wanted to find more militia people down from L.A. You got to get out of the cities. And every time, you know, you get into the cities, even in any history that you read about or, you know, even if it's a fair representation and, you know, on television or in a, you know, documentary, the cities just tend to forget about God. They become, like I said, humanist bastions of just filth and a petri dish for sin. And that's the reason we become ranked like this in the world. And I'm not even saying it's a fair ranking. I took a statistics class once and I saw just how they manipulate everything in the system, and it's a joke. You can make any outcome you want. But having traveled this nation and been to just about every major city, my father was a truck driver, so the summers, in order to keep me out of trouble, I had to ride along with him until I annoyed him so much he let me go. But to keep an eye on me so I wouldn't get into trouble with my gang of friends, from June to August, I was riding the highway in an 18-wheeler unloading trucks for my dad, which was actually pretty good because I learned a lot about this country and I learned, you know, hard work and didn't get into trouble. You know, the rest of my friends were getting girls pregnant and getting married at 18, you know. I was out trying to make a buck so I could get the things that I thought I needed at the time. But I digress. I digress. But yeah, if we got rid of the major metropolitan areas, you know, overnight, God's fickle finger of fate, well, not fickle, I shouldn't have said that way, forgive me, Lord. God's finger of fate, boom, and the cities disappeared. He went Sodom and Gomorrah on them and just toasted them. Think about the quality of life in America. Think about how quickly it would rise up. Think about how safe our streets would be. Now, I'm not condoning that a bunch of idiots go out and nuke the cities. But I do think it would be a good idea for God to do it, wouldn't it? Am I off base here? 559-561-8225. 559-561-8225. The other thing I want to move on to is a little more micro. We all know about that Vandersloot moron, the Dutch guy. I hate saying that he's Dutch, you know, because it just brings shame to the entire family tree. Not that I'm related to him. Whose daddy protected him? Yeah, killed another woman on the 5th to the day, 5-year anniversary of when he made that little girl disappear in Aruba, murdered her and did away with her body or sold her into slavery. Well, we all see the media that's going on where they're praising the Peruvian police for getting a full confession, because they had him. They had video cameras going and coming. They had DNA evidence. He couldn't deny it this time. You know, he did much better than those idiots in Aruba. And we're going to talk about that after the break. We're going to talk about how the FBI may have paid for him to go and kill another woman. And just the stupidity of the American FBI. So we'll be back right after the break. I'm Dutch Jones. Thank you so much for listening.
Signs of the time are on cardboard on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading. There's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need and bleeders, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Thank you for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio Program. And if you get nothing else from our show, there should be two things that you learn. One is, you need to work together with other like-minded people. And number two, you need the basic equipment to keep from becoming a refugee. So whether you're looking for a water filter, tactical gear, surplus gear, or just want to look into some new survival equipment, you need to check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. We carry surplus, and we carry new lines from MilSpec and Voodoo Tactical. And if you don't see it on our website, please send us a message and we'll find it for you. So if you're going to need the gear anyway, why not buy it from us? You'll get it for cheaper than you will from the source, and it'll help out the ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So whether you're new or been in this for a while, check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk.
Gun.
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel
in. Put out all points, bum. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
A new world order.
Attention.
World order.
Attention.
World
order.
Government is an emergency.
Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones. Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
And we are back. I am Dutch Jones. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program on a beautiful, beautiful Thursday afternoon as I peer out to the Sequoia National Park, a symbol of the federal government's seizure of land. It's the worst thing about Teddy Roosevelt. Everybody goes, thank God for Teddy Roosevelt or we wouldn't have the park. Well, you can't.
That bear wouldn't be dead.
That bear wouldn't be dead. No, you can't have it both ways. If you believe in states' rights, you believe that no federal-held land other than a couple little offices here and there should be allowed within each state. You know, some people would argue, well, if he hadn't set that aside, there'd be a bunch of, you'd be all paved and there'd be skateboard parks. I don't believe that for a minute. That's going to be one of the things that need to change after the next war of federal aggression is won by us. You know, parcel out that land and sell it to people are going to do something with it and bring it into dominion and control the land like the Lord has commanded us to do. Yes. Lou's going to look for those songs. He's trying to figure out if he can find them. You may be able to download them during the show and use them for the next break there, Minuteman. Let's see. What else was there? We were talking about... Oh, yes. Vandersloot. Vanderscum. The FBI tried to do a sting because he was... what's the word? Is it blackmail or extortion? Extortion. He was extorting money from the family of the girl who disappeared in Aruba. He wanted $250,000 to tell them what really happened and what he did with the body. Well, after being given about $15,000, he met with some undercover FBI, and he was videotaped saying that he shoved her, she hit her head on a rock, and his dad, the now defunct dead Dutch judge that protected this scumbag, helped him bury her in a location that is now under a foundation. They examined the area. He never found any body. There's no evidence that what he said was true. He later said that he lied, but he took that $15,000, went to South America, and found another victim. So the FBI took your tax dollars, gave it to a foreign national who murdered an American teenager so he could go to South America and kill another woman. Now, they didn't arrest him when he took the extortion money. They said they were building the case. You take the money, you go to jail. You know, that they could have held him on that, and they could have tortured the guy and found out what he did to that little girl. Well, she was running around drunk in Aruba. She wasn't a little girl. I'm not blaming the victim, but you know what I mean. The FBI just amazes me. They rushed a judgment on the Hutari on hearsay, on free speech issues. You can say whatever you want about the cops. It's not like they're the executive officer. You know, you can't make death threats against the president, but everything else is just fair game under the First Amendment. You can, as long as you don't take actual actions to do it, you know, when you fall into the conspiracy and RICO stuff. So let this guy fly away or kill someone else on the exact day. And there are actually idiots out there sending me email when I put this stuff out on Facebook and things like that, saying he's being set up. He's being set up. Yeah, the Peruvians really got, they don't have enough going on with the drug war, with border skirmishes, you know, with everything going on, they have to frame a Dutch spoiled brat Eurotrash guy. That's ridiculous. I mean, I love a conspiracy just as much as anybody, but that's ridiculous. Yeah, they waited till he left. They went in, turned off the video camera, brutalized this girl. He gave a confession. There was a Dutch member of the consulate in the room, translators, a local legal counsel present, and he gave a full confession. They should have asked him about what he did with the little girl in Aruba. But having been to Central and South America, he'll be convicted. He'll probably get the full 35 years. It doesn't really matter, because once those folks in the prison, because prisons down there are different than here. I don't know about the big cities in Peru, but the jails might be a little nicer, but the prisons don't have cable. So they may not find out about this for a while. They have to get some newspapers, you know, be all drawn out. Maybe the trial will go, he confessed, so there's going to be procedural things. But when he gets to jail, there's going to be several angry people waiting for him. And I don't know if it'll be quick or he'll commit suicide after years and years and years of being victimized. But either way, he's going to get the punishment he deserves. Even if he went to an American prison, I think it would be the same. And that's the one caveat in our flawed system here. But I just, you know, they don't have the death penalty there. Everybody's angry about it. But even if the FBI had been able to convict him of the murder or he confessed, he would have been tried in Aruba. The crime did not happen in the United States. It happened in a protectorate of Holland, Dutch, you know, under their system. So, but he did commit extortion, and they could have got him at least in jail for that here. And that probably would have brought his downfall. You know, he doesn't have his daddy around to protect. I can't believe he implicated his father. But, you know, I don't normally talk about, you know, topic du jour about that stuff, but the FBI thing, I couldn't let that go. That they give him $15,000 tax money, and then, you know, even more than that probably, and he goes and he finds another victim. Yeah. Meanwhile, they're running around trying to frame guys like you and me or women like you and me that love the Constitution, people that love the Bible. They're trying to throw them in jail for hate crimes, but yet they're letting murderous extortionists funding their murder tours around the continent, around the hemisphere. one more reason to just look at the federal government, just shake your head and say it's got to come down. Let's just tear it down to the foundation, which is the Constitution, and slowly build it back up. You know, another thing they're doing, this war on drugs that's causing all kinds of problems in Mexico, is spilling over to America now. And yesterday, there were over 400 arrests in a Mexican drug cartel sweep, but it happened in the United States. This wasn't a sweep down there in one of their unpronounceable states. I can't Spanish. I can't read it. I can make fun of it. I can speak the accent pretty well, but I can't figure it out. So Washington, this is a Reuters article. More than 400 people accused of having ties to trafficking for Mexican drug cartels were arrested in 16 U.S. states on Wednesday, U.S. authorities said today. As part of the latest sweep, 429 were arrested and nearly 3,000 pounds of marijuana. 3,000 pounds of marijuana. That's a ton and a half. That's nothing. That's nothing. There's probably more than that growing within rifle range of my head right now. Yeah, 3,000 pounds isn't anything. 247 pounds of cocaine. Well, okay, 247 pounds. I weigh about 230. That's still, I'm not that impressed. $5.8 million in U.S. currency. Okay, that's just a drop in the bucket for these businessmen, these non-traditional businessmen. And 141 weapons seized by the Justice Department and Drug Enforcement Administration. It's Drug Enforcement Administration? I thought it was Drug Enforcement Agency. When did it switch to administration? That's probably part of the restructuring. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I apologize for that. I always thought it was the Drug Enforcement Agency. Said. Now, they're just going nuts over this. Oh, look what we did. You know, we're hard on crime. We're hard on the Mexican crime. But this was small. 429 people and only 141 weapons? I'm not impressed. The suspects were charged with various offenses, including conspiracy and distribution of illegal drugs, such as cocaine, heroin, marijuana, methamphetamines, and Flintstones vitamins. Just kidding about the last one. The sweep is the latest effort by Mexico and the Obongo administration to try to clamp down on drug trafficking along the border where violence has escalated. Pressure has grown on the two governments to tackle the problem. Instead of shutting the border, they're going to go round up a few key people that they will be replaced by tonight. But tensions between the two countries has also risen in recent days after the fatal shooting of a Mexican teenager by U.S. border agents, an incident that prompted a formal complaint by Mexico and the FBI investigation. Yeah, I talked about that yesterday. He was hurling rocks, which is a deadly weapon, and he got zapped by a Border Patrol agent. And then people on the other side attacked again. It was a bad news for the Border Patrol agents. I don't normally support federal agents, but in this case, I think it was a righteous shooting. It's not just because it was a Mexican, but I've been in that situation. I can speak to that. Rocks are not a fun thing to get hurled at you. It's not cool. It's not cool to throw rocks. The boy was shot on the Mexican side of the border in Ciudad Juarez, which I found Ciudad means city, so it's Juarez, as several Utes were running from U.S. Border Patrol agents, but some U.S. officials said the agents may have feared for their safety, and the group was trying to illegally enter the United States. You can tell here they're already building their throw the Border Patrol under the bus. U.S. officials said the agents may have feared for their life. If they were going to stand behind their men, they would have said, officials said the agents have feared for their lives and for their safety. They're going to throw these Border Patrol guys under the bus. Watch. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder expressed regrets for the death of the teenager, but he said the relationship between the two countries is still good. Yeah, you know, it's okay. We can have a full war on our border going on. We can have war on our streets because your expatriates are coming over here and destroying us, but we're okay. Can you imagine if your neighbor was doing that? Your neighbor was climbing over your fence in the middle of the night and stealing stuff. Your neighbor was digging tunnels and sneaking in toxins in. Your neighbor was going to your teenage daughter and selling her drugs and raping her. Your neighbor's boy was coming over and stealing your car and shooting your son and your cat. And he said, yeah, but our relationships are still good. What a retarded government we have. My apologies to our retarded listeners. He said the FBI investigation will look into what happened and who, if anyone, would be held responsible. Now, with the escalating violence along the U.S.-Mexico border, President Barack Obama plans to seek an additional, here we go, your money going, $500 million for security to send up to 1,200 National Guard troops to the border. They're going to sit on desks. They're going to stand in towers. They're not going to touch anyone. They're not going to be allowed to have ammo because of a prior agreement that was made in 92. With Mexico, that we won't allow our soldiers to be armed on the border. Over 22 months of a targeted focus of the Mexican cartels, more than 2,220 people have been arrested, and $154 million in U.S. currency, 2.5 tons of cocaine, 501 weapons have been seized. I'm telling you, 2.5 tons of cocaine is nothing. More than that comes in over the Gulf, well, until the oil spill, because everybody's out there, on cigarette boats daily. That's nothing. Nothing. 501 weapons seized out of 2002. So about a fourth of the people had weapons. And most of those weapons were what? Stolen from Americans. Or bought from China and brought up north of the border. Period. End of story. So then once again, they're trying to mold your view, your worldview, by showing you, hey, look, we're doing something. And they throw out these numbers, but most Americans don't know what those numbers mean. Out of, let's say, 20 million invaders, they arrested 2,220 people. Out of those 20 million invaders, I would dare say a third of them are involved in the drug trade. If you look at the distribution chains and what it takes to get somebody in every neighborhood and every city and every part of America to sell drugs to your kids and to adults, you know, adults grew up taking drugs and now they're taking drugs and having kids of their own to take drugs. 2,220 people is nothing. For every neighborhood, every corner of America is infested with drugs. Every small town now, really. You know, I talked about the sanctity of the small town, but it's even that part's over. I grew up in a town of 2,000 people, and there were drug busts there. There were kids that were getting all kinds of weird drugs. They were growing marijuana in their dad's cornfields. But now it's being brought in. Just like everything else, we shipped our jobs overseas, you know. You've got Meth Valley down there in Riverside County. I'm sorry, Mead Valley. Is that what it's called, Mead Valley? Where all the, you know, meth capital of California is. And it moves around. I heard Bakersfield was that way now. It's not white folks doing a lot of this. When I listen to the radio every morning, I get up at 5, 5:30-ish. I turn on the news, and you hear about all these local drug busts, and it's all Spanish surnames and the occasional name that you can't pin. So Baldonado, you know, whatever. You may be Portuguese, I don't know. But the majority of them are specifically Hispanic names, and if they were to be honest, they would say they're illegal aliens. They don't want to admit that. So they arrested 2,220 people and were supposed to pat them on the back in 22 months. It's ridiculous. It's utterly, completely, totally ridiculous. Ridiculous. let's see. Where was the other one I wanted to talk about here? A little bit about the Blagojevich, the former governor of Illinois. It's getting dangerously close to implicating El Bongo if you've been watching the testimony that's been coming out. I'm sure that they've already pre-run all testimony, pre-run all statements, clipped out all possibilities to connect to El Jefe El Bongo up there in the White House. But it's an interesting little thing, the stuff I've been reading there, you know, the little connections here and there. You know he was tied into this. You know that he is deeply seated in Chicago crime politics connections. And just keep an eye on that. They keep bringing up I'm trying to think of the name of the guy. The mafia guy who helped pay for El Bongo's house. It's escaped me. It'll come to me in a minute. But that's okay. You know, eventually when we get to hold the tribunals, we'll be able to dig the stuff up. There'll be enough people around that we can get some good statements from people who are afraid to tell the truth now. But once they see who's in control, they'll know that they're free and they don't have to fear these Fabian socialists anymore. Did you hear that they're finding out that a lot of the people buried at Arlington Cemetery have the wrong headstones? Now, when I'm dead, I'm not really going to care where my, you know, that, because I'll join the church triumphant and, you know, I'll get my new heavenly body. But it's just disrespectful. I mean, they're finding out there was a lot of laxed workmanship, let's say. Now, I wouldn't say corruption, because who do you make money burying somebody in the wrong place? But just failure of oversight. They can't even bury people in the right hole, this so-called federal government of ours. And we're supposed to trust them with higher tasks. They can't even get the names right. I mean, I'm not even talking on the battlefield when somebody's blown apart. But they have the remains, they have the family, and they put them in the wrong hole. The wrong body in the wrong hole. Come on. And you want to trust them with your health care, with raising your children, with controlling your incomes, with controlling your investments, with controlling the water you drink. I mean, I could go on and on. And they can't even put the right dead guy in the right hole. Every once in a while you see a story about some shabbily run funeral in Southern California, funeral home or a cemetery where there's corruption involved. They don't even bury the bodies, they sell the bodies, they do all this stuff, and they make money off of it. That's outright evil, but at least they're doing it on purpose. The U.S. government can't even bury people properly. And the majority of Americans want them to control when we're breathing, what's going on. It's going to get worse, folks. It's only going to get worse. And there's absolutely nothing that is going to stop this decay, I believe. Oh, God could intervene. That's why we got to prepare. That's why we got to stand up. That's why we do what we do. That's why I do what I do. I'm not going to assume I know why you do what you do. You may just be doing it for your kids, and that's noble enough for me. I'm doing it because I hope I live through it so I can just watch on TV these trials as the Clintons sit up there and writhe if they survive it, you know, in shackles, you know, no makeup, no hair dye, no lip injections, no what's that? They put a some kind of poisonous vaccine in their heads so they don't have wrinkles. That's fine. I want to live to see it. That's why I do it for other than the righteousness of it. My earthly desire is to live long enough to see the trials when Pelosi has to get up there and justify what she did. You know, and of course it'll be. I was just following the orders of Herr Obongo. I was following the orders of Zog, the New World Order. It's not my fault. She's an idiot. If you just listen to Pelosi talk for 5 minutes, you can tell that she's just. There's nothing up there. It's just a conduit for her handlers to tell her what to say. And that's the way most politicians are, except the occasional handful. Okay, what's going on here? Let's find this. Where did I go? FBI probing to. Let's see. Just in case that you were wondering if it went away, they're still debating greenhouse gas limits in Congress, which a lot of people say, well, what does that have to do with liberty? What does that have to do with anything? Well, the false religion of global warming didn't go away just because there's an oil leak in the Gulf. They want you to think it went away, and the whole cap and trade thing is moving on. The redistribution of wealth, the new currency-based carbon credits, is still going along, and it's still being debated by your people over there that you voted in or didn't vote in or whatever. Now, Obama's greenhouse gas rule survived Senate vote. See? It's not dead. It's not a done deal. In a boost for the president on global warming, the Senate on Thursday rejected a challenge to Obama's administration rules aimed at cutting greenhouse gas emissions from power plants and other big polluters. The defeated resolution would have denied the Environmental Protection Agency the authority to move ahead with the rules. Crafted under the Federal Clean Air Act, with President Barack Obama's broader clean energy legislation struggling to gain a foothold in the Senate, the vote took a greater significance as the sign of where lawmakers stand on dealing with the climate. And that's what they'll do. They'll put up a straw bill that's a little weirder, a little different, and everybody's, oh, we got to vote that down. Meanwhile, through committees, through votes, the real bill's coming through. It's just like that South Carolina candidate that may have been done by a Republican to draw out the racist vote, like they're saying. They'll create straw legislation. They have no intention of it passing. So that people go, oh, I can't believe that. And then it's part of the Hegelian dialect. They demand more from you, but what they really want is somewhere in the middle. And they make you think that they've compromised and that you've won some argument or some debate by going, okay, you know what? We're going to take away the death penalty for polluting. Who's that? Someone's calling on the cell phone while we're on the air. That's a no-no. Luce, let's see who it is. Who is it? Tell them we're on the air. Who is it? Huh? Rita? There's no one. No, tell them they must have the wrong number. Tell them. I don't know anybody named Rita. Unless it's Rita Moreno. Is it Rita Moreno? She hang up. Yeah, I've been getting a lot of wrong phone numbers this time. So don't buy into their game. They're going to keep pushing this thing. It's not done. It's completely done. If ever there was a vote to find out whose side you're on, this is it, said Senator Barbara Boxer, who's up for re-election. Hopefully she'll get beat out. chairman of the Environmental and Public Works Committee. The vote was 53-47 to stop the Senate from moving forward on the Republican-led effort to restrain the EPA. Senator Joe Lieberman, independent from Connecticut, he's one of those moderates, predicted the vote would increase momentum to adopt comprehensive energy and climate legislation this year. See, it's just it's all part of their game plan. But Obama still needs 60 votes to advance his energy agenda, and Democrats don't have them yet. Senator James Inhofe, a Republican, I hope I pronounced that wrong for our friends in Oklahoma, I-N-H-O-F-E, Inhofe. I thought it was Inouye almost for a minute there, said the vote made clear that a majority of the Senate back either a delay or an outright ban on the Obama EPA job-killing global warming agenda. So there's still some people trying to fight it out there. But basically, when they need 60 votes, that means they haven't bought enough people yet. They haven't offered enough jobs. They haven't offered enough pet projects, enough kickbacks, or just outright bribes. Now, the effort to block the rules is an attempt to bury our heads in the sand and ignore reality, says Tom Udall, Democrat from New Mexico. Yeah, let's just, let's believe in the false global warming god out there. Let's believe in, Mother Nature's choking because we're all driving around. Obama said the vote was another reminder of the need to pass legislation to reduce the country's reliance on oil. Really? I thought pumping all our oil into the Gulf was a great sign to tell us that we shouldn't be depending on oil. Now, the White House has issued a veto threat this week, saying the resolution would block efforts to cut pollution that could harm people's health and well-being. No, that's not what it's about. If it was really about our health, they'd be going to nuclear. Nuclear's clean. It's efficient. It's hard to say, but it's fun to watch. Today, the Senate chose to move America forward towards the clean energy economy, not backward to the same failed policies. And that's all politics. I'm not going to waste my time reading that stuff to you. But they are trudging on with the new economy based on carbon credits, which is, if you haven't been following along, redistribution of wealth, where I don't even believe we're still part of it, but industrial producing nations will have to pay penalties to smaller nations so that they can build polluting plants. China, of course, is the worst polluting nation in the world. Doesn't want any part of it, so I don't know how they're going to get them to buy into it anyway. China's going to back away from that, faster than I almost said a Jew from a ribs barbecue, but I couldn't make that funny. It just didn't work. I've been spending too much time reading about the Israelis today. You look at all the comments that are in that thing, below it, like I told you, and fortunately, people are coming out of the closet and they're trashing this stuff. Talking about how the Dems stink and all that kind of stuff. So that's good. So people are waking up. People are starting to realize that you've got to keep your eye on the ball on everything these New World Order people do. They are chipping away like busy little beavers at every piling of what used to be the American Republic. We can't let up for a minute. We have to be vigilant. Now, and you may say, well, that's kind of weird because he's saying the other day he doesn't believe in voting. I'm not talking about voting. I'm talking about holding him accountable. Because when we win, we got to have evidence. We got to go, hey, remember when you did this? Remember when you violated the Constitution 375 times last month? Well, we're going to charge you for every one of those, and you're going to get 10 years or, exile or death. Those are your options, So let's start. Either you start confessing and we send you off to Denmark where it's safe to live. We are really going to anger a lot of other countries when we start shipping these people out. After we win the war of federal aggression, we'll make a list of all these countries that hated us, and we'll start sending all these people to them. Well, hello, dear.
Hello.
Is everything okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, and there was nothing, right? Yeah, there was nothing. I have an interesting story about the mail, but I'll have to tell you later. I already told it on here, but actually, did I? Did I talk about it on the radio?
Wait.
I don't think I did. Maybe we'll talk about that in the next hour that's coming up here. We're getting ready to slip over to Liberty Tree Radio. We're going to play some music, and when we come back, we'll be over there. We couldn't find any more Steve Voss. We're sorry. So we'll be right back after this.
America fret. They huddle around their TVs if they worry and they sweat. They're thinking I'm the enemy, the one they need to get. Because their mind controllers tell them I'm a major threat. The talking heads, the daily press. They cultivate stupidity and harvest ignorance. They point a crooked finger and they're all unanimous. By calling me extremist cause I'm down on Zionists. So now I want to sing a new song. I want to be an extremist. I want to join a militia and we're camouflaged. I want to be an extremist.
and run around and sing a rabble-rousing rebel song and sympathize with the skitties who realize it was the who did the Germans wrong. I want to be an extremist. I want to get the job done. Now what's so bad about being extreme? If I'm extremely innocent, if I'm extremely keen, if I'm extremely paranoid, it's cause of what I've seen. It's written in between the lines of every magazine. The FBI, the CIA are working for the KGB and getting in my way. Cause they don't like my politics, they dog me every day. I'm getting tired of telling them the problem is oy vey. The enemy is communism. I want to be an extremist. I want to join a militia and wear camouflage. I want to be an extremist and run around and sing a rabble-rousing rebel song and sympathize with the skinnies who realize it was who did the Germans wrong. I want to be an extremist. I just want to get the job done. Wants to know the truth, but all he gets is phony news. His state of mind is captured by the mob's opposing views. His only guarantee is that he shouldn't be amused. Some may win, but most will lose. Their lives are only figments of the thoughts they cannot choose. And I doubt you'll ever see me on the 6 o'clock news, exposing lying, thieving, cheating communists. Who made me sing you this song? I want to be an extremist. I want to join a militia and wear camouflage. I want to be an extremist and run around and sing a rabble-rousing rebel song and sympathize with the skinnies who realize it was the Jews who did the Germans wrong. I want to be an extremist. I want to get the job done. I want to be an extremist and I just want to have fun. Cha-cha-cha.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
We'll put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
A new world order.
Attention.
A new world order.
Attention.
Government
is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
that. Jehu's.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
I was waiting for you, Lou. Yeah, you're cheesing the gorilla. And I'm said cheesing the gorilla. Hi, I'm Dutch Jones. This is the Dutch Jones radio program. This is, it's, what is it? It's Thursday, the 10th of June, 2010. It's about coming up on 6.04 p.m. Pacific time here on the left coast. Just because we're on the left coast doesn't mean there isn't a bunch of us that think rightly. We are in Central California, right outside the gates of Sequoia National Park. I'm coming to you from the ranch property of the church at Kaweah. You can go to my website, dutchjones.tk. That's J-O-E-N-S, dutchjones.tk. And we now simulcast on Liberty Tree Radio and all their outlets, which is a great blessing to us. We had a previous hour that we do from our website using UBroadcast. We kind of figured it out now. We don't have the dropouts we used to. We have to use three computers to get this show on the air and just keep adding more and more laptops. So you can go to that website, kind of find out who we are if you haven't heard from us before. Come on, guys. Who we are and what we're about. And we are, in a nutshell, Christian militant worldview folks. We're pro-militia. We're pro-history. We're pro-constitution. We're not anti-government, as I'm going to discuss a little bit here today, because I ran into one of those folks in the community that didn't know who I was and put her foot in her mouth. We're not anti-government. We are pro-godly ordained civil government. It's in the Bible. Civil government is in the Bible. We just don't like the government we have right now because it's gone outside, first of all, God's law and the law of the land, the Constitution. Because Caesar, when they say render unto Caesar, it's the Constitution. It's not Obongo in the White House. It's not some falsely elected Congress or Senate. It's not a Hegelian dialect-driven compromise system that just do what they need to do to get what they can for their pockets and for their constituents. It's not a democracy. We are not a democracy. Democracies are mob rule. What we really are is we're basically a fallen republic. And we've grown into a mob rule where people can somebody calling again? People with power.
I'm gonna turn it off.
Yeah, just turn it off for now. Power and influence decide what's good for you, because you don't know what your family needs. You don't know what how to run your business. You don't know any of that. You know, we've just turned it over to them, and that's true. We did. We get the kind of government we deserve. First, we've fallen from God's protection. I strongly believe that. You can get mad at me all you want, but it's true. He's lifted his hand of protection just like he has in the past so many times over his people. When we wander away and do what we want to do instead of what he calls us to do, it happens. And secondly, and almost as importantly, but not just as importantly as following God's law, we've walked away from the Constitution, which has been the best God-inspired, crafted rule of law for men. You know, some people, you know, you can start it at the Magna Carta and it ends at the Constitution, and then it started to go downhill again from there. When the Magna Carta came out, it was the point where we started to, as a group of humans, acknowledging that certain men had rights. At that time, it was the nobility, the dukes, the people who ran everything. And then as it finally ended in 1776 with the Declaration of Independence, and then that grew forward, which was a new burst into the Constitution, which was later ratified. I believe divinely inspired rights of man that are granted by God alone and unalienable. Now, I'm not a law guy. I can't sit here and argue all the laws with you. I can't give you theory. I can just tell you what I know from what I've learned from much better men and women than I am. I stand on the shoulders of many people. I don't claim to be a know-it-all. People keep sending me stuff like, oh, you were flawed in this doctrine and here. Well, okay, I apologize. But usually I keep it pretty simple. I'm not going to sit here and teach you how to be a sovereign citizen. I don't know much about that. I'm a generalist. I love the holy cause of liberty. I love the thought of salvation for all men, regardless of race, creed, or color. I do understand, however, that cultures conflict, that there was a reason for the Tower of Babel. There's a reason for tribal cultures. It's all biblical. But that doesn't mean that God holds one higher than the other. But sometimes we're not meant to live next door to one another, as in us with Mexico and how terrible that is. But the show will bring you what I think will be a view that you don't quite get everywhere else. I can't teach you anything more. Most people who listen to this type of show could probably do their own shows. The survivalist mindset, the patriotic mindset, it's been going on for a long enough time that the majority of you pretty much know what's going on and you get it. What I try to do is remind us of where this nation really came from. That it was, in fact, the shining city on the hill long before Ronnie Reagan brought that up. Not a fan of politics. I'm not a fan of the vote. I'm a realist. And my goal is in this second war of federal aggression that we win and we hold those evil folks accountable. And that means that every one of us has to survive the fray that's coming up. So depending on what mood I'm in or what's in the public view that day, I discuss it and put it forward for you. Now, today I had an interesting little situation. I've shared with you in the past that the U.S. Postal Service is trying to shut down our post office here in the town of Cahuilla. We are a Commonwealth And that offends some people because they think that that's collectivism or communism. No, we're just a commonwealth. That's what the city was. The city, the town was founded in the 1870s, and it was actually founded by Marxists, but they were later chased off by the U.S. Cavalry, and then cowboys took it over. And up until the 1960s, that's the way it was. In the 60s, the hippies came in slowly. We conservative right-wing, and I use that term loosely, I hate those terms, but we right-thinking, like-minded people are still in the majority here. It's just these libtards and their money are more vocal and more active, unfortunately. A lot of the people here have that lone wolf mentality. I came up here to be left alone. I don't want to go to the town meetings. I don't want to do stuff. Well, the church has been here since the early 1960s. It's always had a militant Christian outlook. The militia movement took off in about 93, 94 here. We have training facilities on our property that are visible from the road, so it freaks people out. They hear us shooting throughout the week. They hear us having large training exercises. They see us carrying weapons around because we're an open carry county. They see us taking part in public meetings. They see us writing to the editor of the local communist rag, the Kaweah Commonwealth newspaper. And well, today I went to the post office. There was this little old lady sitting there in her little red Ford pickup. Strangely enough, she was counting out 20s, and it had to be at least a couple thousand dollars worth of 20s. And then she had a stack of euros, and she's just going through them and stacking them up. And I walked up, checked her mail, saw there was nada there. And as I'm walking away, I grabbed a stack of postcards that promote the little historical post office. It's been here since the 1880s. And it looks like a giant outhouse, just made of redwood. You know, it looks like a big, like, four-seater outhouse. But it's our post office, and we love it, and we want to keep it. Well, the Postal Service pulled the contract, and basically it's just a big mailbox now. You can't buy stamps, you can't ship anything, you can't weigh anything, and we're fighting to get that back. They want to take away our zip code. They want to take away our identity and have us fold into a larger district post office. And she says, well, did you hear they're closing down the post office? I said, well, yes, I have, and I'm very angry about that. And she says, well, do you know why they're closing it down? I said, yes, greed and control. I said, the government wants to consolidate its powers, and it wants to make more money. And they said, we weren't shipping enough stuff because only about 40 of the 80 boxes were occupied. And that's just because there's not a lot of people here, and we would encourage anyone to get a box just so they can say they have a Kaweah box. And she says, well, I know the real reason. I'm best friends with the postmistress, who I also know, and I know the real reason. I go, really? Why don't you tell me what the real reason was? And she goes, well, you know about the church down the road. And I said, what about it? And she says, well, it's their fault. I said, oh, really? Why is that? She goes, well, they're being watched by the government, and they want to take over the post office. And nobody wants them to get a hold of the post office. And the post office said it's just better that we close it than give them the opportunity to get the contract. And I go, really? I go, that's funny. And I said, why are they being watched? She goes, well, they're anti-government. And I go, really? I've heard that they're pro-government. They're just anti-bad government. They're for civil government, which is funny because we just had this discussion last night in church. She goes, no, they're anti-government. I said, well, how do you know this? Did you go there? Did they tell you this? She goes, oh, no, I've just heard. I said, well, I don't get into rumors very much. And what I should have said was, well, they've tried to close the post office down since the 1960s. And actually, people from the church used to run it. And they stopped doing it because of the requirements, and it wasn't making much money, and other people took it over. And I just looked at her, and I let her put her foot in her mouth, which I always do with these libtards around here. I'm going to keep using libtard. Lou, don't put your foot in your mouth. That's just gross. He's trying to do it. He's got a dirty old sock on. He's trying to put his foot. I wish the camera was on and people could have seen that. You were like centimeters away from putting that big old stinky toe right in there. How have we trained this boy? But I let him talk, and then she goes, well, why'd you grab all those postcards? I said, well, I've got some listeners to an internet radio show I do, and I'd like to send these postcards to them to maybe encourage them to write a letter to the U.S. postmaster, tell them to keep our little post office open. They're beautiful. They have a picture of it, and we'll just start sending them out to people, I think, when you know, as we think about it. It's got like 30 or 40 of them. She goes, oh, really? You have an internet website. What is it? And I go, well, it's dutchjones.tk. Make sure you spell Jones, J-O-E-N-S. So I figured about a half hour after our meeting, she went home and punched up the website. And she's like, I was talking to one of those terrorists. Oh, no, what am I going to do now? Because now she's going to have to run to the postmistress who has been lying to us and pretending like she's our friend and back-talking us. I love this kind of stuff. Because now I'm just going to walk right up to her next time I see her and say, yeah, I met some red-headed old hag that said you were blaming us for it going out of business. You know, it had nothing to do with all the, you know, low usage and that, and the fact that you wanted to retire and do a masseuse business, which is what she was telling me.
Yeah, that's what she was telling me.
It's just funny in a community of this size we can't even handle our public image. So what that tells me is it doesn't matter. If you're ashamed of the militia, if you're ashamed of Jesus Christ, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter that we bring money to this community with our gatherings. It doesn't matter that we are sworn to protect our neighbors in hardship or calamity as a militia. It doesn't matter that we train to look for lost children. It doesn't matter that we've paid the rent of down-and-out people in this community over the years. It doesn't matter that we've given food and shelter to people that are down-and-out. It doesn't matter that we've shown up to fight fires and remove... Our pastor and his son were driving by a house that was on fire. Happened to be the house of a Unitarian, of all things. The weirdest of all the cults, I think. Unitarians are just bizarre to me. They saw the house on fire, and they ran in to pull the guy's furniture out. And I'm thinking, you know, this, especially this guy, because he was a perception is reality. If you don't know what's happening, it's not really happening. If you just think happy thoughts and the universe will protect you. And I'm like, why would you even risk your life to save this man's furniture? Because in his moronic belief system, if he just prayed hard enough and looked the other way, his furniture would be protected, basically. Kind of like the naming and claim it people in the Christian movement. And they said, yeah, he may not know who Jesus is. This is what the pastor says. He goes, but I and my son know, and we know what we're called to do as neighbors. So they risked their life saving this guy's belongings, you know, saved over half his furniture before the house burned to the ground. Bizarre stuff. And so it tells me that we've reached a point in America where so-called... What are you looking for, baby?
Pen.
I don't know where all the pens are. I got a... Oh, there's... That's oh, so I just bought the microphone. Okay, we'll have to... I know that there was one out there because we had the Lou's Hannah Montana pen that was here somewhere. It's, I know it's Anthea's, but I like to blame Lou for the Hannah Montana memorabilia that I keep finding around the house. Sorry. I don't know where she gets it from. We don't condone the Hannah Montana Hoochie Mama stuff, but I think people just, you know, give it to her. Oh, look, little girl, here's a pen. And then all of a sudden it pops up in her toys. Oh, I found it. But I'm not ashamed of saying that I'm in the militia. I'm not ashamed of saying that I am a right-wing practicing gun owner. I'm not ashamed of Jesus Christ, most of all. But so many in this movement are just like, oh, we've got to keep a low profile. We can't do anything. Even if we suddenly reeled everything in, I stopped doing the radio show, we tore down our FM broadcaster, stopped blaring 4 hours of Mark Kornke every single day, because we even do it Saturday and Sunday. We kind of pick the best of and play it. And even if we did all that, the stupidity in the community, the stupidity in the county, the stupidity in the state would still have the armored cars coming down the road and squishing us if they wanted to. They would. Because the truth doesn't matter anymore. We're in a madhouse environment. There's no perception of reality anymore. We have allowed this nation to slip so far into liberal-controlled, downward spiral decay that we are not going to convince them of their stupidity. So it's almost a waste of time. That's why, rather than go, oh yeah, I go to that church, and how dare you, and yada, 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 and when I get going and I start to verbally bruise somebody, I've triggered heart attacks twice in my life doing that to somebody. At least they claimed they were having a heart attack. Maybe that was just to get out of the debate. Twice in my life. It was pretty funny. Once the police came, and I said, it's not my fault he's got a weak heart. He shouldn't have took the stance that he did. And I never touched him. I just stood toe-to-toe and made him question his existence. So as we go down this path to federal tyranny, maybe it's a waste of time. I want to know what you think. Is it a waste of time for me to defend what we're doing except to the choir? Because that's what I'm doing right here. Some people tell me, why do you dedicate 2 hours of your life? Actually, it's more like 4 or 5 because I have to read stuff. You know, you see how bad the shows are when I just got on here and do it cold. It's like, and then today, I stubbed my foot. So let's talk about boots. So like today, I put some time into research, talking about articles and concepts. And last night, we had a great Christian teaching on America's providential history and the decay of the American culture, centered around mostly around the cities, where, you know, the hope lies in the counties and the rural areas. Am I wasting my time? The phone number is 559-561-8225. Is it a waste of my breath to discuss things like the like I like to call the Grand Diversion in the Gulf, or talk about, you know, UN sanctions and UN gun control coming down the line. Because every single person listening to this show is either new to the cause and they have an inkling towards this, or they're well-seasoned soldiers for the cause of liberty, the holy cause of liberty. Is it a waste of time to do what we're doing? I mean, here locally with my group, no, because there are people coming to it every day. There are people that have no concept of what to do. They have a desire to serve. They have a desire to help their family survive whatever calamity is coming down the line towards us. So that's why I act locally. But on a national level, is it all over? Is it a waste of time to try and convert our enemies? I spent all day today arguing with Jews over the flotilla massacre, as I'm calling it, getting all kinds of hate mail because I took a stance against, not for the Palestinians, don't get me wrong. I am not for the Muslim cause, but I am against crimes on the high seas and the continued blockade and the way they're butchering the Palestinian people. I mean, I could care. I wouldn't want the Palestinians in my backyard. But is it a waste of time? Should we just prepare the best we can? Should we be wall builders? Should we keep one hand on the trowel and one hand on the sword and forget about what's going on out there as long as it's not within range of our rifles? Are we going to get anywhere that way? I honestly, I'm in one of those moods where I'm not sure. I love doing the show. I love reaching out to people. But it's the same 400 or 500 people every month that listen in from the emails I'm getting. They're sharing with me, so there's definitely a benefit to me. But is it a benefit to you? Are you learning anything? Are we growing as a group? Maybe not where we'll be comrades in arms, shoulder to shoulder, but spiritually. And I don't want to say politically, because that's such a patriotically stand to the cause. Because we don't know where the next Concord is going to be. We don't know where the next Lexington is going to be. It could be North Fork Road. They may be singing songs 200 years from now about the Battle of the North Fork Bridge that's 3.2 miles away from here. Because we stand on that bridge because that's the best choke point within our area of operations when the Schumer hits the fan. I'm going to keep using that. I saw that in Patriots. Schumer hits the fan. When the Pelosi hits the fan. Because that's my goal. That's why I'm in this. Not for the glory of a song. Because I really, honestly, 100% believe it's going to happen. No doubt in my Christian body. Now, it may not happen where I'll be a viable person. I may be 85 years old, sitting on a bunk with two cap and ball pistols and a bayonet in my teeth, waiting for them to come over the wall like at the Alamo. That may be it for me. But why I do it is so that my son and my daughter will have the proper mindset to train their sons and daughters. So I kind of give you what my point of view is on it. And is that wrong? Am I terrorizing my kids by preparing them to be self-sufficient, to learn about the Constitution, to learn the Bible, to shun those things that their peers of the same age are out there worshiping? Am I creating a narrow mindset by doing this? These are all topics that every once in a while I think of. I have to take stock in what I'm doing, and I think a righteous man does. Am I doing the right thing by my family, by my community, by my church, by my nation? I don't care about the rest of the world right now. That's a bigger problem later. And these are the things we have to think about. And I hear, when I listen to the intelligence report and they talk about the future, I love that because it gives me hope. They talk about what's going to be done after the battle is won, how the trials are going to go. How that puts a bad taste in my Confederate leanings. The rebuilding of this great nation. The restoration of the republic, let's put it that way. That kind of stuff really encourages me. And because I usually listen to it hours later, because they're on our FM station right now when I'm on, and we may change that because the pastor wants me to be on the FM station now too. So he wants to move some stuff around. So I'd love to be the donut hole. I'd love to have 2 hours of Mark Kornke, 2 hours of Dutch Jones, and then 2 hours of Mark Kornke. Just a whole evening of wholesome militant thought and to ride the coattails.
A cornathon and a Dutchathon.
Yeah, a cornathon. How would you say that? You can't say it's Kornke-rific.
Yeah,
I mean, that's too many. It's cornrific. It's, well, cornrific. I've used that term relating to corn, but corn, a corky-rama, corky-tastic.
Corn-tastic.
Yeah, but you can't just say corn. You have to have the whole name, Kiornki. Kiornki. We'll have to come up with some kind of phrase for it, you know. And then, yeah, if there's anything in the chat room, give us some ideas. Is Ed in there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Hello, Ed.
Hello, Ed. But that's the kind of things that have been going through my head today. Where are we in this? Why are you in this? What has motivated you to do it? I know a lot of militia guys are doing it just because of the hatred of being told what to do. I get a little nervous around those guys because that tends to anarchy. And we're definitely not, you know, anarchistic here at the church. We believe in the rule of God's law and then the law of the land as handed down by God to the men. And in the beginning, you know, if you get into Exodus, you'll see that the Lord appoints judges. He asks, well, actually, you choose them. You choose leaders of tens, fifties, hundreds, and thousands. It's biblical. It's in Genesis. I'm not going to give you the verse. You need to read the whole book.
Dutch-erific.
Huh?
Dutch-erific.
See, it's easier for Dutch. Kiornki is such a unique name, it's kind of hard to... We'll have to come up with a whole, you know, 6 hours. You know how they always say, you know, the networks always have some special word for what it's going to be. It's like, in-your-face militant radio. You know, I'll have to do some promo.
It doesn't get any more extreme.
Yeah, it doesn't get any more extreme. If it got any more extreme, you'd have to wear body protection, you know, something like that. Yeah, you'll have to clean your ears. Okay, we got an unknown truck coming in. Watch it. That's one of the reasons that we moved the studio. We have to be able to view people coming and going now through the property. Because right now we don't have... Okay, I lost view. Do you see him through the trees, Lou? Okay, just keep an eye on them. They may just be going around. We've had a lot of idiots from the city coming up here and tagging stuff. We have a nicely painted green church. He came in and went around. Sorry. He's on the other side of these trees right here. It's the other bad thing. We don't have good side avenues from here, but at least we can tell when people are coming. Yeah, just go. Just no, don't go down there alone. Just go out and see if they stopped in the parking lot, and then we can call somebody. But, yeah, we just don't want people coming in tagging or stealing. A bunch of people came in and stole propane. We had a propane tank down by the church. It was simply for offloading to barbecues so the people from the church could use it, you know, when they come up here to camp and stuff. I went out there and it was empty. And I know the church people wouldn't have done that. It was like, you know, because the last person to use it is supposed to say, hey, I think it's empty. And that's been the pattern. So they come in here, they sneak because it's behind the building. They try to do what they can to steal stuff. And it's just what's going on up here. And it's fading. It's moving like waves into our community. But anyway, there is a biblical order to things of civil government. You know, there's self-governance, where we control our bodies and our urges, which is a constant battle for some of us. You know, I like to eat a lot, and sometimes I have the urge to punch people. But I deal with that. Then there's family jurisdiction, and the Lord sets it up pretty clearly that the man is the head of the family, the wife is the helper, and they were equally taxed with... okay, somebody's walking around down there. Okay, get on the phone and call the pastor and tell him there's somebody walking around down there. Use the pastor's home number. I don't know who it is. It's a blue pickup and a young man in a white hat and white shirt walking around the property. Just go outside and do it real quick. Always got to keep an eye out. I don't know who this guy is. Just walking around the parking lot. You never know what's going to happen. Those of you that have been longtime listeners, remember the night that I almost got ran over trying to stop somebody who was trying to illegally trespass and... In the background, you could hear shots fired. Everybody freaked out. It was pretty... I tell you what, Liberty Radio Live, I think that was the beginning of the end for them. They didn't realize just how hardcore we were, you know, when we had a drive-by happen on the property. And needless to say, the sheriff was like, well, did you hit anybody? No. Leave me alone. But that's just the way it goes. So I have a first duty to watch, so I apologize for people listening. I got to make sure this guy's not some moron. He may have somebody buried. We have a cemetery. It's called an ecclesiastical mortuary by law in California. And it's all founders of the church from the 1960s, you know, people who started it here, walking around. Again, what's he doing? And their bodies are interned here. And sometimes, you know, relatives that we've never met come to it. But usually, more than not, it's just some kids coming to drink in the cemetery because, you know, this whole goth thing that's going out there now in the common culture, they think that cemeteries are cool, so they hang out by them. I've thrown out a few people for being disrespectful for, like, drinking beer in there and stuff. But if they just come to sit and read a book or something, because it's a nice little cemetery, I have no problem with that. But I think Lou and Stacy can handle it. It doesn't look devious. You wouldn't be out in day. It's still daylight here on the West Coast. So we're able to do it. So we deal with those kind of things here as a Christian militia. The render unto Caesar issues. The render unto the Lord always comes first. And we chew on those things and spit out the bones is one of the ways somebody up here puts it. And for some reason, that just infuriates our neighbors. And it's weird to me. Did you call him?
Yeah.
Yeah, is he coming over?
He said, oh, we're eating Sunday.
Oh. Oh, is that what he said?
No.
He said, we're eating Sunday? No, it's not Soylent Green. Lou, I love it when you throw a joke out there that scares me. Like, the pastor said we're eating Sunday because there's a trespasser. You told him that I was on the show and I couldn't do anything? Okay. Well, we're going to take a break right now. I'm looking for your calls. 559-561-8225.
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is a very real prospect of a new world order.
The new world order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
house without a gun.
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
A new world order.
Attention.
A new world
order.
Attention.
This is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time to
touch Jehu's
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Yes, yes, yes. I just did a bad husband thing. I'm going to share it with all of you. Stacy called and said, I need a nice hot bath. Make sure you turn on the water heater before I come home at 4 o'clock. And somebody came over and I was doing show prep and I forgot to turn on the water heater. So now she has to wait till 7:30 to soak and have Calgon take her away or whatever that is. Is it Calgon? I can't remember. Whatever's in there. Whatever bath powder's in there. So I apologize. I forgot. I could blame it on Lou, but he didn't know it was supposed to get turned on. But we're fixing that. We got our water heater. Those of you that have been following along over the years and knowing the trials and tribulations of the Dutch Jones journey that is full of catastrophe. I think the pioneers had it a little easier than we did. No, it's... I over-exaggerate. Yeah, we have to turn our hot water heater on because otherwise it costs $300 a month just to heat the water because it's shorted out. The elements are bad. But we're picking our new water heater up tomorrow. We got a 100-gallon water heater because we realize that as we do more trainings and more get-togethers, it's nice on a Sunday night after church, after the get-together. You want to have a nice hot shower and go home. So we've got vacant properties all over the place, plus we have the shower here in the research center. So 100 gallons will allow a couple of people to take showers, and then if we space it out enough, you know, a lot of people, because there are people coming from L.A., there are people coming from Orange County that train with us. We are a diversified group. We sat down yesterday, and I'm not sharing anything, but it was over 100 people that we put on our list. We're like, wow, we didn't realize it was that many. So the duty rosters are being started. The tasks are being thought up. That's what we're doing here. The first half hour, I talked about why we do what we do. Now I'm going to talk about what it is we're actually doing right now as a small group. And a lot we're learning just from other folks. And we had someone come in yesterday from Defensive Firearm Training. This is an Austrian man named Rudy, and I never pronounce his last name. It's like Waldinger, Wallbanger. Just go to our website and go to dftraining.com. dftraining.com. That's Delta Foxtrot Training.com. And you can see it there. Watch their video.
Delta Farley.
Delta Farley. Yeah, Lou's making up his own phonetic code. At least he's thinking. But we had him come on our ranch property, and we're not going to tell you what he told us on everything, but we said, now I know it's going to freak you out that we're a church and we're a militia and we're trying to do all this stuff, and you know, you're probably, you know, we thank you for letting us hire you, because we've been trained by him before. He teaches everything from unarmed self-defense all the way up to precision rifle to squad tactics, everything. You go to his website, he'll come to your location, he'll fly anywhere in the world, you know, of course the rates go up, but he'll fly anywhere in America. Do it on your facility, in your house. And he's like, oh, no. And I'm not going to try to do the Austrian accent. Today I can't seem to do my accents. It's just not a good accent day. And he told us, oh, no, I'm going all over the world. I'm doing churches. I'm doing communities. I'm doing homes. I'm doing businesses. And he goes, let me tell you something. He goes, I fought in Bosnia. I fought in the Congo. I fought in former Rhodesia. This guy's old. He's almost 80, I think, 70s, something like that. Still a tough soldier. Reminds me of Jeff Cooper with an accent. And he said, what you're doing is diligent. In fact, having done the assessment, I don't think you're doing enough. You're not doing as much as your cohorts around this country are doing. You need to catch up. That kind of gives you an idea. And so we did a lot of assessment. And one of the key things he said was that if that's how many people you're going to have here, you know, I'm not going to give you exact numbers, but it's over 100, you need to start thinking now how you're going to keep them busy. You know, you do all the preparation you can now with the core cadre that you have that are permanent party living on the ranch now, but don't do it all. Some of the things you leave for the people that are going to be rolling in as the economy starts to crash and man starts to prey on man. And he said, he goes, I can train you any way you want. He goes, but honestly, standing toe-to-toe with any military, that's not what I'm here for because it won't work. You'll get hit with indirect fire, air support, and you'll be gone before you know it. And we said, no, we're not one of those idiots to think, oh, we're here to fight, you know, the UN soldiers. We know that. So he was glad to hear that. He goes, a lot of people are thinking they're, you know, that it's 1776 again and we're going to be able to fight musket to musket. You know, he says, no, you have to have bug out plans. And after you've read Patriots, you can see what happens in there. Look at what happened to the Knights Templar. What were they called? You haven't gotten that far yet, Lou. Sorry. There's a group in there called the Templar, a militia, and how they try to make a stand. So he says, but I can train you to fight the zombies, the refugees, the malcontents, the biker gangs, all that kind of stuff, and how to have the proper mindset, which we just went into it saying, okay, let's go into it tabula rasa, blind slate. We wanted to act like we knew nothing, and we just kept our mouths shut and let him dictate, and we all three of us that were on the committee took notes. And the thing that I really liked is he said, you've got to keep these people busy. Structure from children to the elderly. Have the children and the elderly work together to do the gardening, the tending to the animals. Have a safe haven for them. You have to build a safe haven to protect your kids, because he says in Bosnia, during that war, when he was over there, former Yugoslavia, he says there was a lot of kidnappings of the young. And they use them against you. Plus, they'll target the young in ethnic cleansing. And he goes, and who knows, America may turn that way. Hopefully you've gone to DFT site and you see what I mean, the caliber. This isn't just a guy who teaches you how to do a quick draw. He goes, I don't teach you pistol craft. He goes, I teach you how to fight with everything at your disposal. We have to train our distant families and drill them on how to get here safely. We have to train our local families on their duties for preparing and prepping the facility. We have to figure every little detail out. We have to, and this is stuff we've already talked about, we have to come up with our own version of the Mayflower Compact, a set of rules that everybody agrees to or they're set outside the wire. You know, we'll be friends, you can live in one of the abandoned homes, but you do not benefit from the security, the fellowship, or the production of this facility if you don't agree to this constitution that we put together. You have to have capital punishment for capital crimes. You have to have corporal punishment for lesser crimes. You have to have a strict code of conduct so that you know whatever situation arrives, 90% of them you'll be able to figure out, because, you know, Murphy's Law of Combat, there'll be things you never thought of. We were pretty much on the ball with, you know, positioning things and securing things because of just the backgrounds of the people involved here. We've got a couple ex-military. We've got people that have been in the movement since the 90s that have taken classes, have rubbed elbows with some really good people in the militia movement. There's been a lot of great people that have passed through this church in the last three decades or so, and it's continuing. So it was a nice eye-opener for us. It was refreshing. And it's not degrading any of the other instructors that we bring in. It's just saying we've taken it up a notch with this guy. This guy's amazing. He was he worked for the Foreign Service for several different countries, including the United States. He was a bodyguard to Mrs. Reagan during her, you know, first ladyship. And like I said, he's been all over the world. The stories he's telling us, it's like, you know, we were asking him every little question we could, even though we've asked it 1,000 times before. You know, what type of weapons, what caliber, what uniformity do we adopt? Everything down to the type of uniforms we pick for the terrain we're in. We had him for several hours, and he was worth more than what we paid to do a site assessment. This guy just had it. And, you know, afterwards, after he was off the clock, of course, we're not going to sit there and ask him to tell war stories while we're paying him, unless it teaches us something. But this guy told some amazing stories about being in Africa, you know, hunting terrorists and stuff in Africa, and coming across, what was it, he said, a lady with a machete? A dedicated attacker with a machete that he had to empty a magazine into, and she kept coming because he was using 9mm. He says, you have to get your mindset ready for dedicated attackers. He goes, and you never know. He says, he called her an aboriginal. It's just because of, you know, where he's been around the world. You know, we call them tribal or savages or whatever, but he said aboriginal. And he says, they're going to be doing drugs. They're going to be and he's talking about our aboriginals, the inner city aboriginals. They're going to be hopped up on all kinds of stuff to give himself false courage. And you may be at the front gate down at the Kauai North Fork Bridge, and you know they're 100 yards out, and you're hitting them, and they still keep coming because they don't feel it. You know, he said, think about the North Hollywood shootout, the bank robbery. You know, they were hopped up on lithium and Prozac and a you know a handful of other pharmaceuticals. He goes, plus you add the desperateness of them that they're hungry. You know, they don't have a survival mindset. They're just consumers. They're like a plague rather than a disciplined force. He goes, you may have this whole time been thinking about fighting a disciplined force, which isn't necessarily true. But he says, you have to figure out an offensive, not just a defensive way to deal with these people before they even get here. You have to set up patrols. You have to set up observation points that are beyond your ice line of view up here. And fortunately, because you know we do have the rough numbers estimated that are coming, let's say half of them get here, we still can do that. We talked about communication being critical. The minimal use. Did you have a question? What's your question?
Actually, a favor
to you. What?
I'm looking for a holster for my pistol.
Okay, Stacy has a Walther P22, and she's going to take the CCW class, and she's looking for recommendations for holsters. Stacy wants a recommendation for a holster for a Walther P22 because it's such a new gun, she's having trouble finding it, and I'm not really a pistol guy.
Olive drab.
She wants an olive drab one. You want a cloth one, not like a plastic quick draw? So anybody that knows or has that gun that can recommend one, a nylon one in green, a provider for that, Walther PPK, go ahead and email me at DutchJonesShow@Yahoo.com, DutchJonesShow@Yahoo.com, and I'll forward them to her. Walther P22, and mag holders. And they're little tiny mags for little tiny bullets, but don't let them fool you. I'm thinking about getting one for me. I think it would be a good backup gun to my 45, a good one to have in a fanny pack in my bug-out bag. I mean, I don't diminish the 22 round at all. And that was something, you know, I've learned that long ago, but I don't think anybody believed me here. You know that old saying, a prophet's never honored in his hometown? I've been telling people 22s are a great thing to get, and this guy yesterday, Ruger 10/22s, 22 pistols, buy as much ammo as you can. Two reasons, you know, if it's your only go-to gun, fire all 40 rounds into the guy if you get one of them big mags. He goes, number two, you're going to need him to train the youth and the able-bodied people that are coming up here as refugees that have prearranged to come up here. You don't want to waste your 30 caliber ammo teaching them the basics of sight alignment. Hopefully most of them, honestly, most of our people are already in that mindset, but who are they going to bring with them? Is grandma going to be coming and then second cousin Elmer and Lemuel and Festus and Bocephus?
Uncle Fester.
Uncle Fester. Yeah, I used to get called that a lot when I shaved my head. Don't bring that up. That's being sad. I had some little kids ask if I was Uncle Fester one day in the mall when I shaved my head when I was doing that Christmas arm security. Yeah. Well, no, it was Christian. It was before I met you. I was for Christmas doing arm security to Sears in the parking lot. And I shaved my head, and, you know, I was out there. Southern California wasn't really cold. And these little kids go, are you Uncle Fester? And they didn't mean it in a mean way. They just said I actually look like Uncle Fester. So I started growing my hair out again. And I wasn't even fat then. That's what's funny. I was like 190 pounds back then. But anyway, as we get back on topic here, I try, you know, the first half hour I talked about why we do what we do. Now I'm telling you what we're going to do and what we're doing. I'm just doing it as an encouragement to you, and I want feedback from you guys. What have you done? Are you not with a group? Well, I'm telling you, God's given us this period of grace to reach out to people. I mean, I can honestly tell you now, if there wasn't something going on here, we'd be moving. We've got a contacts in other states. I'm not going to give them out because I know my ex-wife listens. I don't want her to know where I'm going. And or Michigan. I mean, I would move to Michigan. I hear them calling out the cheap house prices up there. Even a low life like me could raise enough money for, you know, a dilapidated semi-rural house. I'd go up there and join their cause. But the God I serve is a loving God and an awesome God, and I trust him, so I'm serving here. And I think I can remember it was the last half hour before that, people were like, there was a guy in Minnesota Patriot in the chat room, said, why don't you move to California and join our group? He's like, oh, no, not with all your laws. I completely understand that. We live well behind enemy lines. We're almost men behind the wire. I mean, the only way it could get worse is if they threw us in prison for our beliefs, which they probably will try one day. But I believe these are the front lines. I've got a family reason to be here because my daughter's being held hostage through the court systems and unfair, anti-man-biased custody laws here in California. But as soon as she's old enough to make a choice and she chooses to go with me, well, we may bail. I don't know. I'll pray on it and see what the situation's like then. But California is definitely a frontline state. I know a lot of people disagree with me on that, but just about any city is a frontline now with crime and just blight and everything. That's another front in the war. But we're literally fighting an occupational army here in California with the Reconquistas. Crime, I mean, every day I share it with you kind of off the cuff. Oh, four more homicides today, three more drive-by shootings in this county, and I'm in a rural county. I mean, this is, I think we have 300,000 people in our county, the whole county. It's large, and there's probably, I think the largest city is maybe 190,000 people. That's Visalia. I may be wrong. I don't know how big Porterville is, to be honest with you. But you can't escape it. And, you know, even in Idaho, there's some weird stuff going on from what people have been telling me about some local things that have been going on where they let the feds do what they want. Montana looks nice, all that place. But we've decided to make this at least a safe haven, a small, I can't say city, a township, a commonwealth of refuge for those of us that are like-minded that have tapped into the fellowship of this church. And we're going to keep doing what we're doing, regardless of what the county says, regardless of what the state says. The Sheriff Whitman did get elected, and that was one of those lesser two evil things. I continue to write in my pastor. We're going to get him to run next time. He's already decided he'll run for sheriff. If we get another election, I think it'll be in 4 years. But we've got to deal with the best, make the best of what we've got. Continue to pray, continue to focus on just making sure we're not doing this out of selfishness. I mean, my earthly thing is, and I've said it before, and I'm saying it again for any new listeners we may have, my greatest fear is that my kids and their children will be huddled around a fire in some basement somewhere, hiding from people that are hunting them for their beliefs, you know, reading torn pages out of a Bible because that's all they have anymore, and cursing those of us of this generation and the previous generations that did nothing to stop this. That's my earthly cause. And that hurts. I lose sleep over it. I have nightmares over it. I focus every day on the child that I have contact with every day. I thank the Lord that I have Lewis here to train. Everything we do, I try to focus and make it a teachable moment. From mowing lawns to interacting with people in public to how we deal with some strange vehicle pulling in. And if, you know, the way learning works, you get about a third of it you retain. So I just keep doing it. And I try to do it in a way that doesn't, you know, warp his worldview. Because it would be easy to keep him in a point of, you know, color code of awareness orange all the time, and he'd have a pretty warped psyche. So I try to keep him at yellow. I don't want him at white unless he's asleep. But I want him to be alert of what's going on. Or I may say, hey, did you see how many people did you see in that convenience store we just came out of? What was the guy in the back row doing? I'll throw stuff at him like that. I'll say, what was in that car that we just passed? Those are the things that my father did for me, but for a different reason. We were involved in crime most of the time. But I still learned the skills. And I'm praise the Lord that he's forgiven me for those and that I can apply those skills I learned, you know, for the holy cause of liberty. But I don't want to go to my death knowing that I didn't do something fighting for the freedom of my children and their children, the grandkids that I may not live long enough to see because my kids are so young and the war may be so soon. But I'm not going to run away from it. I'm not going to live in fear of it. I'll take every penny we have and use it diligently. We live, and I hate the word stoic because it's kind of anti, but we are stoics. We live like Spartan soldiers. I mean, we live in a barracks, basically. We don't have the finer things that a lot of families have, and some take for granted. We don't have cable TV. We don't have, we don't have a living room either. That may be changing soon. We may have the opportunity to move into an actual house that's about 300 feet south of us, and hopefully we're going to try to get internet cable there because they don't run it to this building, and it would be because we're off way far away from the poles. They want thousands of dollars to run it. But if we can get it in that house, you know, that would be good too. And then we do 24 hours a day of this. But that's fine. We're not miserable about it. We kind of laugh when you hear people going, oh, did you see the latest such and such episode of such and such? No, we don't have TV. And I have to tell you, when we do take like a weekend break and go to the in-laws, I do get hypnotized by the military channel and the history channel and the learning channel. So it's probably better that we don't have TV. Yeah. So maybe we won't get cable, or at least you guys won't tell me we have cable.
When I leave the house, you like uncover the box and watch what you want. But.
Run a cord from the neighbor.
Yeah, we'll run a cord from the neighbor's box.
Yeah.
Get all Field Expedient on our entertainment collection. That's a skill there. But we just keep fighting every little battle we can. And some of them we realize it's not worth fighting, like the problem with our neighbors. I don't think I'm going to really... When we start doing this radio show on the FM side, when we get our 400-watt amp up in probably a week or two, I don't know if I'm going to do the show for them. I don't know if it's casting pearls before swine in this community. Because the people that attend our church that know about it, they tune in on the internet already. It's kind of like a nice little cozy, convenient group of friends. I mean, how many people are in the chat room right now?
11.
Yeah, we've got 11 people. Are they all normal listeners? Are there any new people in there? I can't go.
There's
two guests. That's probably, one's probably the FBI, and the other one's probably Nicholas Arthur from First Amendment Radio. They don't want to sign in. If you're a guest, sign in so you can chat. They're not, I mean, what's it going to hurt
you?
They can make fun of me if they want to.
No, we're going to make fun of the guests.
No, yeah, we'll make fun of the guests. You can't defend yourself.
Who's guest 556?
Yeah, who's guest 556? Yeah. How dare you?
How dare you?
One of the things that I wanted to do, but I didn't get to it, is I emailed some of you about this hideous video that was made by a satire group in Israel making fun of the Flotilla Massacre. I sent one to Liberty Tree Radio. I didn't get to listen if they got it or not. They get so much email. I'm just a fly in the ointment doing that. But, Lewis, do you have it where you can play it? I don't think we have enough. Do we have enough time? Okay, we'll save it for tomorrow. But it's this horrible. What's the name of it so they can look?
WeCon,
C-O-N, the world. Look for it on YouTube. It's a bunch of Jewish so-called comedians using select snippets of security video and hand cam video that was seized by the Israelis from the people on the flotilla. Now, I'm no fan, like I said, and I keep having to do that because I get all these things, oh, you're supporting the Muslim cause. No. The enemy of my enemy is still my enemy. Okay? I'm not going to, you know, it's good when they grind into each other. But this song is just pathetic. It mocks the deaths. It lies. It just shows, you know, how, and I call it Jewtube over there. If we were to make a video mocking the deaths of the two soldiers, which I wouldn't even do that, the two IDF soldiers that were hacked to death or clubbed to death, whatever it was, if I made a video, if I had the skill, you know, to have Lewis give me some soundtrack and sing about it, made a YouTube video, it would be taken down immediately. I would have the ADL over me so fast, all over me, telling me I'm disgusting and all that. If I had any money, I don't have any money, so they'd back off right away, just like the Southern Poverty Law Center did when they did a financial search and saw I own nothing, you know. So it's just,
probably thinks it's funny.
I don't know who thinks it's funny. I looked on there and there were a lot of anti-Muslim people that just by default were going, oh, this is really good. And I'm like, no, it's not. These knee-jerk Israeli supporters, disgusting. Yeah, they're pro-Jew just because they hate Muslims. Yeah, they're pro-Israel. We got a guy here at the church I love. He's a brother. I love him dearly. And he listens to the show from time to time, and he sends me a message, why are you promoting the Muslims? I said, I'm not promoting the Muslims.
No.
I'm attacking Israel on just grounds. And he's like, well, you know, they're just defending their nation. I go, yeah, several miles out to sea. And those arguments have all been hashed up and everything, but why don't we go out on a little bit of it? Why don't you start playing it, and as we talk, just have it in the background. And it's just bad humor. It's not even funny. If this is the best they can do, just keep playing it. If this is what they call satire in Israel, they're worse than Saturday Night Live. It didn't even make me laugh. I thought it was the media doing this to be funny, but somebody said it's a professional group. So as we fade out, we're going to fade out on this music that is a slam from Israel on the 9 murdered people on the flotilla. We'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm Dutch Jones. Check out the website. Pitch in. We need your financial support. I say as I'm knocking Israel. Sure. Let's go.
There comes a time when we need to make a show for the world, the web, and CNN. There's no people dying, so the best that we can do is create the greatest bluff of all. We must go on pretending day by day that in Gaza there's crisis, hunger and plague.
'Cause there are a billion vaccinated, won't buy the basic needs like
successful travelers with guns and our own knives. The truth will never find its way to your TV. Soldiers, no one cares. We are small, and we took some pictures with doves. As Allah showing us, for facts there's no demand, so we will always gain the upper hand. We'll make the world abandon reason. We'll make them all believe that the Hamas is Mama Teresa. We are peaceful travelers. We're waving our own knives. The truth will never find its way to your TV. If Islam and terror brighten up your mood, but you worry that it may.